My responsibility is to talk to you about, from the standpoint of the 785 million food insecure people, what does all this mean? So I want to start, though, by saying thank you to Secretary Vilsack and for his leadership on supporting the completion of this report and not just the completion, but the comprehensive research by so many that went into the development of this report. And for Dr. Walsh and the Associate Director Backlund, they have the answers. So I'm not going to try to be the scientist, because that's what I'm not. I am definitely not the scientist. I am a person who, as the Executive Director of the World Food Program, deals with the challenges that result from climate impact and affected populations, who go hungry. Because, as we know, the most vulnerable people are also the people who are most susceptible to the impacts of climate change. So it's been important, it's important that I'm included in this conversation today. Because the U.S. government is a significant partner to WFP in ensuring our ability to perform this work. And that investment has allowed us to address the challenges of so many. But we have an opportunity here. As the entire global community came together earlier this year, and embraced Agenda 2030 as an opportunity for us to address the challenges of hunger and poverty and to provide an opportunity for peace and prosperity for the entire global community. But we recognize that none of that is possible without addressing the challenges of climate change. And in fact, that without addressing the challenges of climate change, we move backwards instead of forward. As this report so clearly articulates, climate extremes affect global, regional, and local food security, as well as global, regional, and local stability. Left unaddressed, climate change intensifies the stress on existing resources, increases scarcity, and disrupts entire societies with devastating consequences, as noted particularly for the most vulnerable people. More than 80% of the world's almost 800 million hungry people live in degraded environments, prone to natural disasters. And over the last 10 years, half of WFP's emergency and recovery operations were in response to climate-related disasters, costing some $23 billion. For example, in sub-Saharan Africa, over 90% of the agriculture is rain-fed, and that threatens not only food security, but also the stability of highly impacted communities. As an example, in Somalia, where climate affects food security and climate affects conflicts, the evidence demonstrates that periods of major drought increases the risk of high-intensity conflict in that one country by up to 60%. In 2011, the famine, 4 million people required life-saving food. Similar patterns are emerging in communities across the Sahel, right through to the Horn of Africa. We also know that children often pay the price of climate change with their nutrition. Because of drought and the impact of failed harvests in Niger, children are 55% more likely to be undernourished. In Kenya, children born in drought-prone areas are 50% more likely to be stunted. The global evidence is clear on stunting. Stunting increases underperformance in school. Stunting leads to lower productivity in later life. Stunting results in lower and poor health. And stunting makes populations less resilient over the longer term. The report had a couple of key items that I'd like to highlight today. One of them, of course, has been talked about by each of the speakers, and that is that effective adaptation does reduce vulnerability. Adaptation works. The challenge with adaptation programs to date is that they have not been scaled up enough to support the broader populations that are required to ensure the resilience of more vulnerable people living in susceptible areas. When we talk about adaptation, what do we mean? You've heard about the agricultural adaptation activities, but we also are talking about social protection programs, including, Mr. Secretary, school feeding programs that make a difference, that keep children in school, that ensure that we build their resilience for life. We're talking about nutrition programs that support the first 1,000 days, that give children the mental and physical development that is required to make them capable of living life to its full opportunity. We're also talking about investing in the kinds of smart agriculture programs that were discussed by the other participants. But one thing that hasn't been talked about today, we're also talking about investing in women. We must invest in women in agriculture, in social protection programs, as well as in additional programs that will help women overcome the inequity that limit their ability to support their families in ways that will ensure food security. In WFP, we believe adaptation efforts can both address people's immediate acute needs while simultaneously supporting people's own resistance, own resilience building for recurrent crisis. Resilience may be elusive, but it is not imaginary. We can make resilience happen in populations by investing for longer periods of time in the tools that are necessary for populations to withstand the shocks and crises that climate-affected areas endure. But we must also, as noted by the other speakers, support the world's smallholder and family farmers who manage over 90% of the world's farms. Adaptation for farming must include innovative and complementary programs such as weather-based insurance, which we haven't talked about today. We must give smallholder farmers in these vulnerable areas the same access to risk mitigation tools like weather-based insurance that we have in the developed world. In Ethiopia, for example, the R4 Rural Resilience Initiative is an insurance initiative which has demonstrated its value. It enables farmers to increase their savings by up to as much as 120%. R4 was also particularly supportive of those women farmers that I talked about, who have achieved, in fact, the largest productivity gains by having this risk mitigation strategy available to them. R4 then enables vulnerable farmers to not only invest in productive assets, but also to protect their livelihoods in times of crisis. The bottom line is prevention is better than a cure. If we act to address in an anticipatory manner, the needs of those who are vulnerable providing support early in response to disasters, and we know we can save lives and livelihoods and reduce the cost of response. The net cost of late response is 5 to 7 times higher than the cost of supporting multi-year resilience building activities. For this reason, WFP here at COP21 has launched today a new food secure climate resilience facility, a climate financing mechanism that will help us in 3 ways. First, by providing the anticipatory action that is necessary to blunt the effect of ongoing and predictable and forecasted shocks. Second, by supporting and providing an additional mechanism of financing during the time of response to a shock. And third, and most importantly, I would say, by ensuring that our efforts don't stop when the cameras go off, when the shock is no longer at the door of that family, but we continue with the multi-year investment that is necessary that reduces that family's, that increases that family's ability to endure the next strike. Because what we know about climate change is that it's not if the next strike will come, it is when the next strike will come. We know that those strikes are more intensified than they have been in effect in the past. And we know that families that are affected by shocks and crises like floods and droughts and storms take about 3 years to recover from any shock. And so our ability to support them during that period after the shock will ensure that we have less need to support them in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for indulging me today as I speak, and I know I speak passionately because the people who we serve will never sit in rooms like this one. And their voices are only heard when those of us who have the opportunity to represent them speak passionately about what is necessary to provide a different opportunity, to provide hope. The challenges of climate change will affect parts of the world more than the others. But we know that we live on an ever-growing, smaller planet. And those machines that we all use every day, and we call them iPhones, smartphones, they've made that world even smaller. And in order to ensure security for all of us, we must ensure food security for everyone so that every mother has the opportunity to ensure that her child grows up with the hope of a better future no matter where she is in the world. And what this report does is give us more evidence of what we can do that will make a difference, ensuring that the science is the science supports the planning of and implementation of programs that help us move forward. So I want to end where I began and thank Secretary Vilsack and the United States government for demonstrating the leadership that has given all of us who are attending this conference the optimism that we will make a difference. We are and can and must get it right. Thank you all.